should have actually asked that again, so you've got it perfect.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company that's aiming to revolutionize blockchain gaming, with a concept where gameplay is based around social connection, strategy, all fueled by the ambition to win cash prizes, all done via blockchain and crypto. The token pre-sale of this company was huge, $440K USD in pre-sales, which has shown that early appeal to not only investors, but also potential gamers. This company is Tanks for Playing, and I'm talking to Aaron Alderman, the director at Tanks for Playing. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks, Anthony. Good to be with you.
Awesome. So just before we get into the, you know, this amazing project, this company that's only literally a couple of months old, I just want to remind you guys that if you like Great Things with Great Tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link in the show notes or go to launch.gtwgt.com and register your interest. Just as a reminder, all episodes of GTWGT are available on all good podcasting platforms, all hosted by Anchor FM and distributed out to all the platforms there. And also back on YouTube, on the YouTube channel there. So subscribe to YouTube down below, bottom right, and then we can go from there. Now, just before we get into it, again, obviously want to just talk about this. We're talking about blockchain, we're talking about crypto, we're talking about investment. So just want to remind everyone that this is not investment advice. It's intended for informational purposes only. You should obviously do your own research and make your own independent decisions when considering any financial transaction. So now that that's out of the way, Aaron, let's get started and talk about Tanks for Playing. Firstly, just talk a little bit about what the company is, and yeah, effectively how you got started.
Yeah, so as you mentioned briefly, our company's only a few months old. We started in August this year, off the back of I was working with a social media blockchain company called Carbon.social, and we're heading towards our major release in September. And, you know, I could foresee that my time there wasn't as required going forward. So, you know, I was thinking about my own future. What did I want to do? And I thought, you know, why not? Why can't I think of an idea and, you know, take it to market and see how it goes? And that's really where I then started to think about, you know, do I want to make a DeFi product or do I want to, you know, build a game or, you know, what is it in this space that I could bring to the table, you know, with my experience in order to, you know, make a difference or to do something exciting. And that's where I looked around on the internet for quite a while just to find, you know, is there a game concept that would work on the blockchain? Is there a DeFi a concept that hasn't been explored yet? And so I was thinking about, okay, my first idea was around, you know, how can we make yield farming more fun? But then I realized that's actually what gaming is on the blockchain currently. It is just fun yield farming. So, and when I found this concept, I think it was on Reddit or something like that, I saw these kind of simple game rules. And I thought, you know, that works really, really well on the blockchain. I mean, it didn't exactly work. There were a few things that didn't quite fit within what the blockchain can provide. But, you know, I thought, okay, like, let's remove those line items. And does it still sound like a good game to play? And it sounded like it was good. So then I basically spent a couple of weekends, made a proof of concept, basically built a Web 2 version of the game, you know, a traditional server. Traditional server infrastructure. Wrote that in Node, then wrote the front end in React and Babylon JS with a, you know, 3D views and things like that. And then my kids kept harassing me like, when you finish the game, Dad, when you finish the game, I want to play it. And I thought, okay, there may be something here. And then, yeah, the more I talked to people, the more I realized that, you know, it wasn't such a harebrained idea. And then we kind of just accelerated the process from in that initial idea and went, okay, well, let's make a business out of it. Let's like come up with a name. Let's register the business. Let's launch it. Let's like, you know, and then I looked at the crypto market and I was like, you know, I've got a hunch that things are going to pop off soon. And it's going to be now to do it. So I kind of worked backwards and thought, okay, November would be a good time to kind of, you know, start the initial project and work backwards and say, okay, maybe September is a good time to start and then, you know, ramp up that period within there. And Yeah, and that's basically been the journey. We wrote the white paper pretty quickly in like a couple of weeks.
I've read that, yeah.
Massive help from, you know, my wife Jessica. She did immense amount of work while I was, you know, still trying to hold down Carbon.
Yeah.
Basically helped.
This is a family thing, right? You've got your wife involved, and yeah, that's great.
Absolutely.
And you got another partner? Yeah. Have you got another partner that's involved at the start?
That's right. So Callum kind of came on the scene a little bit after that. So, you know, we'd started the ball rolling, and then I pitched him this idea, and he was like, "Great, how do I get on board?" And I was like, oh, "I didn't even know you were on the market looking for a job."
Yeah. So
he was in that position where he was umming and ahhing about his future. And you know, he wasn't feeling too motivated to continue, and he had some time off. And then when I pitched him this idea, he was like totally enthused about it. And you know, Callan's such a great engineer, but he needs that motivation and that passion to be able to want to do something interesting, exciting. And so this kind of ticks the box for him. And I've worked with him in the past, and I trust him.
I was going to say, you've worked with him before, right? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I was actually part of the group who hired him at my last job. So
there you go.
You know, we've got such a great history. We've worked together, you know, many times. You know, he's still a junior, so I still, you know, need to talk with him and you know, give him advice. But he's growing, and he's actually, you know, maturing in this ability to take on more for himself as well.
Yeah. Now. Can I go back to how you, like, in terms of your genesis, in terms of obviously, you know, you're full stack dev, and devs own the world today, and it's crypto is like a place where people can just, like, you know, expand and use that experience. But how did you start to get, you mentioned Carbon, but what was the stepping stone to go from, you know, what you were working on traditionally? Like, I know you've worked on web-based platforms and applications, but how did you get to blockchain and Carbon, and then obviously the tanks?
Yeah, so I mean, when my last job with Boston Consulting, I was working. I was basically the lead developer who created a cloud platform for data science, and so basically I learned a lot about web technologies, then both the front end and the back end, and absolutely everything you need to know about that industry. You know, that's kind of what we were able to develop. But then I kind of got to a stage where just the lifestyle of working at Boston Consulting wasn't really something I was interested in long term. You know, I've got four kids, so the ability to kind of that's right to drop well everything done. And then fly and fly well around done. The world to some other place, it's just not feasible from a family's perspective.
Yeah,
it's kind of losing that passion and motivation. And so I basically went solo, and I left, did nothing for about 3 months. I basically reskilled myself on all the tech that I'd missed out on being a lead, because when you're a lead, sometimes you're just so engrossed in whatever you're doing that you forget about the world going on, and the world moves on and tech moves on. So you got to kind of use that period to reskill yourself. And then from there, I was like, okay, now I need to get a job. And, you know, it was funny because the Carbon are also in Canning Vale, where my main office is.
Oh, yeah. It must be said as well, just before, you guys are like, and the reason why I love the fact I'm talking to you, obviously I've talked to companies all around the world, but you guys are completely local Perth-based to me, right? Like, you guys are Perth-driven success story, future, like being the West Australian, we'll talk about that. But, yeah, I just wanted to highlight that this is great talking to a local.
Yeah, and I feel like we're even more local than local, because, you know, we work out in the suburbs. So it's not like we go into the city and, you know, do big business stuff in the city. No, we're actually out in the sticks, you know, at some local factory complex area. So Carbon were literally 2 minutes down the road from my office. And, you know, I applied for the job there, and I was like, you know, I've done all of this work in you know, web technologies and all that. I know how to scale. I know security, all these kind of things. So, you know, you're making a social media platform. I can definitely help you out with that. And yeah, that's how basically came to work for them, because they're more of a traditional style server Web2 architected backend, but with crypto adjacent functionalities. So, you know, I was able to bring all of that Web2 knowledge into their systems, and then I basically learnt Web3, because this was really my first foray into Web3. I basically learnt all of that ecosystem and just absolutely fell in love with it. And there's like, no matter what, I want to spend my next 2 to 3 years in this space. I don't know what that will look like, but I want to give it a go. So that's basically how it came from traditional Web 2 and then, you know, touched on Web 3 and now I'm like fully Web 3.
Full Web 3, yeah. Well, we'll talk about the differences there a little bit later on. I want to actually ask you a few specifics around that. But so how did you come up with Tanks though? Like how did it become Tanks as opposed to anything else that you probably had the option of looking at?
Yeah, so I guess the game concept itself actually was like the thing I've read was actually called it was like a tank tactics game. And so I was like, well, I like tanks, you know, it's a nice concept. It works well. So I didn't really want to, you know, you could have made it submarines or something like that, but there was something just about tanks which just resonated with me. Yeah, it's cool. And I was also thinking like, you know, as a crypto game, it needs a crypto vibe to it. Do tanks and crypto work together? And I think they do. So it's like anything else you'd want to kind of piggyback on kind of fusing those two things together. So, you know, tanks just seem like a natural fit to call the game and to also make the game around.
Good stuff. So let's dive into the very short and quick company history because it's like you said, it's been like a whirlwind for you, right? So early August, you know, like you said, you got the game concept and working prototype created. Your kids wanted to play it. That was awesome. You know, you basically got the white paper out by the middle of August, and then by the end of August, you'd registered the company. And it must be said as well, and the big difference that I've found with this company, and I wouldn't be talking to you if I didn't think that you're a serious company moving forward. Like, you know, this is the dangers of this space where you get those classic pumps and dumps. You get the people that will basically rug pull. All that people know this, right? But from this perspective, the fact that you guys are, I'll use the word fully doxxed and, you know, you're out there, all your LinkedIn profiles are out, you've got history and you've registered this company as a proper business, right? That is powerful and that should give people the backing that this thing is for real, right? So to register the business is a big part of why I think this was successful to start with. So in September then, I'm just going to roll through, you launched the website, you did the obviously the white paper, you then sort of kicked off we won't call it an ICO because that's got interesting connotations in this world as of last year, but public token sale, right? So that kicked off. And then you had a launch party on the 24th of September, which really kicked things off from there. But maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, how the concept of taking a pre-sale and going through that process, because that's interesting in itself, right? Like how does that particularly work? What did you want to do to use the pre-sale for? And then obviously it was very successful. We mentioned $441,000. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in some respects, you know, ideally my recommendation for anyone would be don't do what we did. You know, we were very experimental with a lot of what we did in terms of, you know, being multi-chain. I mean, I think we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, definitely. Big one that.
Yeah, I mean, but that aspect there, that really complicated things tremendously. So, I mean, I look around at launchpads today and, you know, they're very, very simple. They're, you put your concept out there, your website, maybe there's KYC involved, all those kind of things. And then, you know, that they manage absolutely everything for you. And it's almost like everything's on autopilot, but there's a lot of restrictions and considerations that go in with choosing a kind of pre-canned solution. So, you know, we did look around on the market quickly, obviously, to try and find any solutions that worked. And we didn't really find one that worked with our mental model of being multi-chain. So in essence, we created our own system. You know, I used the fact that the people I worked with at Carbon had two or maybe three successful ICOs in the past. And so I was able to just ask some questions like, how did you guys do it? What did you do? And took those lessons learned there and applied it in our domain. So, yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of, we might just touch on the multi-chain aspect just quickly now and sort of deal with it, because I think that was one of the things that interested myself into it. I think it interested a lot of people. So number one, why? And number two, I guess, you know, from the point of view of the pre-sale, you mentioned it did complicate things and you've got certain amounts of pre-sale finances going into Ethereum, Matic, and also Binance Smart Chain. So those are the three. I think three good choices as well, by the way. But just maybe talk about why that was and what are the advantages of that and how it complicated things as well and how you got over that.
Yeah. 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 So why did we do it? I think we did it because we could. So, you know, just looking at, you know, where we knew Solidity, we knew that environment. So it seemed like a no-brainer to say, okay, well, we've got a game that we know how to write for sure on Solidity. So realistically, it's not going to be played on Ethereum, but you don't want to not have Ethereum people on board, because to be fair, that's where the value is. That's where the money is in the ecosystem. So you're happy to kind of have an outpost in Ethereum. And then the question is, how do you get from Ethereum to Binance or Ethereum to Polygon or to Phantom or to all these other EVM compatible parts of the ecosystem? And so the reason why we did it was because, you know, we don't really care about the technology side of that. We care about, you know, what's the user experience? Where are the players? Where are they? You know, if they're not on Polygon, if they're not on Phantom, then we wouldn't support it. But if there's an audience there, if there's money there, then you want to support that, because that's a community, that's players, that's the ability to actually execute on it. And you know, the cost considerations are significant. Like, you know, as I mentioned, even though we're supporting Ethereum, realistically, it's not going to be played on Ethereum. But that's okay. I mean, I think people understand that, and you know, that they will play it on Binance Smart Chain and on Polygon. And you know, if there is a community demand out there for us to launch on other platforms, we're definitely keen to explore that. And being EVM compatible, it's such a small gap to do that. In terms of complicating the launch, in essence, we had to do it manually. There is no cross-chain solution in this space to do it. So, you know, if somebody wants a $1 billion idea, there you go. Like, you create the next launch pad where you can actually do it across
chains. Yeah.
But then I raise the question of fairness, right? So a lot of launches will peg their currency with respect to BNB or with respect to Ethereum or something like that.
Yeah.
You can't really do that when you're cross-chain. So our method of fairness was to say, we'll peg it to the USD value at the time you make the deposit.
Perfect.
Does have some disadvantages. You know, people get confused. They're like, I'm expecting more tanks. What happened? So
yeah, exactly. A few requests
along those lines.
Yeah. No.
And also just the ability to capture, you know, so as the transaction goes on, we had to do a call to CoinMarketCap to basically record that at the same time. So there's a bit of data management. Data goes missing. You know, sometimes a transaction appears, but it's not actually on the blockchain, or you know, it appeared on the blockchain, but they didn't go through our mechanism. So there was, you know, a lot of manual intervention. Yourself and other people also wanted custom rules put in to, you know, split it across different chains.
That was one of the difficult ones, right?
No, but I actually like that, because it says that, you know, we're actually trying to develop this in a way that is user friendly. Like, so you know, another thing, we raised 10% of our funds in Australian dollars hitting our bank account,
which was also unique, by the way. What I mean, and there's a sense of, when you're doing that, there's an ultimate sense of trust in that as well, because there's no blockchain to say the transaction went through at that point, right? It's kind of like your people are effectively gifting you money into your account for you to then do what you want, really, without any consequence if it didn't go through. So that was a good, for me, that was one of the things that I said, told me that this project is legit, because, you know, you wouldn't be doing that, and because you're not going to run away with the money, basically. So I actually really like that part of it.
Yeah, and it did complicate things. And so we didn't realize how much volume was actually going to go through that. We thought it was just, you know, a few people we know, a few people trusted individuals who would, you know, as you said, trust us. But it turned out, I think, particularly because the newspaper article went out, a lot of advertising was also on Facebook. So
yeah,
you know, we did have quite a big groundswell of people who, you know, for them, it may be their first foray into blockchain.
And that's actually what talks to the token, right? That's what talks to not only the token, but the concept of the game. You're bringing in people that want to play a cool game and love the concept of the game. And the crypto side of it is secondary to that, you know? So
That's right.
That's brilliant. We'll talk about investors versus players a bit later on. We'll just move forward. And again, we could talk for a couple of hours on this, and this could be one of those long podcasts, but we'll keep it a bit shorter. Actually, you mentioned the West Australian. It's a local newspaper. It's the dominant daily. It's the only daily newspaper in Western Australia. It goes out to millions of people. As part of that launch pad that you had at the space, you had some interest knock on after that from the West Australian. So just talk a little bit about that, how that happened, because that's how I came across you guys, was through that West Australian ad. So obviously quite successful, but just talk a little bit about that, because I think it's cool.
Yeah, so I mean, we had the idea of a launch party quite early on. But because we accelerated absolutely everything, you know, we could only get our spot like on the 24th of November. And it turned out that was a pretty, September. It turned out that was a pretty bad day because a lot of my ex-colleagues weren't around at that time. And so, you know, I looked around the audience and there were a few new faces. And to be fair, I'm not sure we made the amount of money we put into that back on the night. Yeah. But, you know, just thinking in terms of the serendipity of all of these things, it's like we put that out there. We made this event, put on YouTube. And, you know, we've actually even got it professionally videoed, and we got a professional person to actually edit it for us.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I'll link to it actually in the show notes.
Mm. So we put a lot of effort into what we want, and, you know, we created a lot of merchandise. I mean, I've got one of the mugs here that we nice. that we made as part of the merchandise for it. So we just put it out there into the world, and, you know, you could have viewed that as a not successful venture because nothing, you know, maybe you didn't get your investment back from it. But then, you know, the reporter from the West Australian came across it. And then, you know, she reached out on LinkedIn and, you know, had a phone call with her that evening. And then she was like, do you want to get your photo taken? And so I took the crew down to the terrace the next day and we got our photos taken. And then, it was in the paper the next day. And
brilliant.
You know, what more could you ask for in terms of publicity than to kind of get someone externally who just finds you randomly and then wants to do an article about it? So, I mean,
that's an amazing
story.
People
pay a lot of money for that kind of for that publicity. So
that led to, you know, obviously moving forward. So about a month later on the 24th of October, you actually, you know, had your soft cap of 250K reach, which is amazing. And then things just went ballistic from there. Like by the end of the ICO, basically a week later, you'd almost double that to 440,000. And that led into, you know, that week, you then launched on the DEXs. So it went into what you call public sale on those DEXs, which is cool, on those exchanges, PancakeSwap, Uniswap and QuickSwap. You then distributed the pre-IPO tokens to the people that bought them. And ultimately, you know, from a success point of view in terms of what happened next, I mean, you guys, you were on for, what was the pre-sale price?
A quarter of a cent, 0.025 US
and
dollars, yes.
Yeah, and effectively, you guys got to about almost 2.3, 2.4, 2.5 cents at one point in terms of the all-time high, which is a 10x almost, you know, bump on pre-sale, which is crazy. Did you ever expect that to happen?
I mean, we didn't expect to, at one stage, like 2 weeks ago, we didn't even expect to hit soft cap. So
we
were feeling quite nervous in of ourselves. You know, what are we going to do? Are we going to have to, like, you know, beg our family for, you know, a bit of money and then pay them back? Or we didn't know what we were going to do to kind of get to soft cap. And then, you know, had some really good luck and some, you just basically pounding the pavement, trying to hit investors up. And, you know, we managed to get there. And then it wasn't just get there, as soon as we hit it with a week to go, that kind of opened the floodgates, and then people FOMO'd in, and, you know, there was a great momentum. And also we were timing our marketing push to kind of ramp up, and that last week was definitely going to be our biggest spend. So it's hard to know, you know, what exactly was the catalyst, but, you know, everything was all
just
in alignment.
The markets were
also in a good position as well. So,
yes,
you know, we're tracking like the amount of money coming in. And, you know, if it was a bad day on Bitcoin and Ethereum and all that, then we wouldn't get as much. But if it was a good green day, we'd also be getting a lot more money into the flow chart.
Yeah, it comes through.
Exactly. But looking at, like, once we hit once we actually started, I don't think we could have predicted how successful it went. And, you know, the two catalysts were, the first was listing on CoinGecko, and then the second was listing on CoinMarketCap.
Yeah,
I think that was just the initial exposure that, you know, people, how are they going to find out about us? You know, realistically, if we're not advertising in the circles they're looking at the right time, they might not find us. So we were able to now tap into a big community of people who never had heard of us in the past. It's also complications just around the ICO. I mean, 33% of our audience were actually Australian based, and I don't know what proportion invest in the ICO, but I'd imagine quite a significant were just Australians.
Yeah.
So now we're actually finding
America. That's the amazing thing about it. Like, it's not even a worldwide thing yet. And this is a worldwide platform, right?
Exactly. So I think that was the first time we kind of got our name out there into the wider world. And that's when people were like, okay, these guys look cool. They look credible. They've got some good material. They've got, they look like they can do what they're claiming to do. And that's where you got this good initial push. And, I think, the community, growing the community slowly where, a coin price isn't too particularly crazy. It's not dipped way back to where it was in the past. Only time will tell, but, we are also launching the game pretty quickly.
We'll touch on the game, and the specifics of it in a second. I think just to round that off, I think, obviously in this world, we've all seen it. We've seen things, absolutely pump and, things basically settle down and the traditional up and down of a launch. But what I've seen through, the charts and whatnot across the change is that there's buoyancy in this token already in terms of when, there's a sell, because obviously people are in this, people are in this to make a bit of money as well, not just about the game.
Totally.
So people are seeing an opportunity here to basically come in, do a bit of arb, whatever. But what I've noticed is that when the token gets hit a little bit, when there's a bit of a sell, people are eating it up and buying back into it, which keeps that buoyancy up and around that level, right? So, yeah, I think from that point of view, it just shows you that people believe in the future of this particular project, of the company. So that's kudos to you guys because of what you've built already without even really delivering much. And obviously for you guys, the game is coming. It's betaing in December and you had to bootstrap the company through that pre-sale, which you guys have done. And now from what I understand, you've brought on developers and you're really ramping that up. And that's the reason why the pre-sale existed, is just to bootstrap the company and move it to the next level. So that's awesome. Wanted to talk about blockchain gaming. We'll start just to go through a few things. Like, this is huge. Like, people don't understand this, right? The traditional gaming industry is worth about 160 billion USD with 2.7 billion players globally. Now, a small percent, like even a minute percentage of those aren't on blockchain gaming already, right? Like, we've seen Axie Infinity, we've seen Sandbox, all that meta stuff that happened last week kind of pumped them up. But this is the future, right? Because you and I have got kids, we've talked about this earlier, like 8 to 10-year-olds, they're the ones that are going to be the ones that are really going to be into this sort of gaming. The whole concept of the in-game purchase is what, like, I miss that whole fad. I'm a traditional PC gamer type of guy, right? Even not consoles. That's that era, the 90s and into the 2000s. So I don't get this whole in-game purchase thing that kids love today, where they go on, like, companies will make them buy a skin for $10 or whatever it is, and they buy that, right? So the paradigm shifts now to complete ownership in terms of the blockchain, because that is a more, it's a more circumspect but more trusting way to actually get those transactions done, if you know what I mean. So the opportunity here for you guys to basically tap onto that at such an early part of this industry is huge, right? So what do you see the prediction of this in the future? Like, the in-game purchase is predicted to go to, 74 billion by 2025, and the majority is going to be on blockchain. So how's Tanks built to ride that wave?
Yes, I mean, the industry shift is where are people putting their money? In the past, it was where do the in-app purchases go? They go into the pockets of the big companies. Yes. So they're raking in millions or billions of dollars, and you're not getting anything to show out of it. I've heard stories of people who they get addicted and they will put tens of thousands of dollars into a black hole. Yes, they're going to get something out of the game, but they're not really getting anything back out of that.
No.
And so they're putting in their time as well as their money into effectively a game. This is where the blockchain revolution will actually change the paradigm, because now you can have control over your assets. You can actually get something back from your time. So, the ability to, if you're winning or earning tokens in a game, plus the ability to actually own your skins or own your assets that you've purchased in app, that means you can walk away and now you finish your game, you can start richer than you started. So you can actually, you get money from playing the game, you get money from any assets you purchase. And if the game's also successful, then you're kind of riding on its coattails as well. This model does not exist in the traditional world, not to this degree. and to be a kind of open, flexible marketplace where you're actually getting true value found out through the marketplace. That's the big paradigm shift. And so our mentality in Tanks for Planet is exactly that. We want to give people that ability to own their assets, to make money through crypto, but not in a way that's, you know, bad. We want people to own their assets, to we want to be an ecosystem that works with other ecosystems. So if you've got an NFT, you know, we'll display that as your avatar pick. I mean, that's such a simple no-brainer that it actually gives value to an NFT. It's no longer just an NFT. It can
speaking about black holes and people pictures. Throwing money at black holes. Yeah, you know.
That's right. But I think it's because it's new technology that we've only just discovered, and there's all this money out there floating around not knowing what to do. And so they are jumping on a bit of a hype at the moment, but I think it's going to translate into the future of avatars and skins and the ability to actually have things which have real tangible use cases, not just art or money laundering or however people are doing NFTs.
Well, here's the thing, right? People are spending this money on games regardless. And like you said, it's going in this black hole of nothing. It's filling the pockets of these game developers, which they love. It kind of parallels to the whole, I guess, money thing globally in terms of banks versus decentralized. Like, it's kind of that sort of play, but in a gaming sense, right? So it completely fits with the narrative of what blockchain technology is trying to do to the world holistically. You know what I mean? So it's perfect. So, okay, what I want you to do now is quickly explain the game in terms of how it works really quickly, like within a couple of minutes, just sort of talk about the game itself and talk about how the token drives the game and how that then provides utility for the token.
Sure. So the game is very, very simple. It's in essence like a board. You've got a board of hexagons. You have tanks. The tanks start randomly. Yeah, exactly. Hexagons are the bestagons. so you start randomly on your hexagon, and so you don't know who the people around you are. And the objective of the game is, as time goes on, after certain intervals, everyone gets energy dropped to their tank, and then you can choose to either do something, or maybe you want to save up your energy for later. And then there are other things you can do, such as you can, if you've got enough energy, then you can either get more hearts or get more range for your tank. So you can, there's some strategic elements there.
Yeah.
But the real power of this game is the ability to gift your energy, gift your hearts to other players. And that's where this game is really tapping into the social dynamic.
Social aspect.
Because it's no longer enough just to kind of be a lone wolf who kind of sits in the corner and just, you know, bides their time and then just, you know, goes and attacks. You know, you actually have to work with your neighbor, work with a community, kind of create these ad hoc communities of people and then work together, because that's the way that you kind of get, you can pull all your resources together and then knock everyone else out.
Yeah.
But then this is the craziness of this game has to be that if there's only one winner, then they have to turn on each other.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's cool.
And so the way the tanks token works in is, you know, number one, it's a mechanism to kind of buy into a pot. So you know, if everyone's putting in tank tokens into a pot, then that can be the mechanism to pay out players at the end. There's also we're exploring in-app purchases and how this could potentially work in terms of being able to, you know, accelerate if you're impatient and you want to, you know, pay some tanks to go and get some energy immediately, then you can do that. We want to balance this because, you know, we don't want it to be seen as a pay to win. So we want kind of an exponential curve as, you know, if you want to keep buying more and more energy, you can do that, but it will cost exponentially more tanks in order to do that.
Yeah.
So you can imagine an ecosystem, and there's going to be a meta game around the tokenomics of a tournament where you're going to get this massive buy pressure of people wanting to kind of load up their tanks to get all the in-app purchases. At the same time, they're also buying into the tournament itself.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some interesting dynamics around how that's going to play out as well.
Yeah. And you guys are planning, you know, big tournaments as well, right? So, you know, on chain, you know, specific chain, then basically rolling up to a central sort of tournament on one particular chain. So there's great, you know, I just love the concept. That's all I can say. And so many people in the TG group, they love the concept before they love the token. And that's the cool thing. And I've said this before. I think that's why it's going to work. Now, in terms of the token itself, there's been, I know, questioning in terms of, you know, the total supply, I think was stated. But you mentioned the burn situation has been something that people have wanted to sort of find out about. So just maybe just again, quickly within a minute, just explain, you know, your strategy for burning the tokens. It's a big thing, right? And also divisibility, yeah. And how that then ties into that.
Yeah. So with burning, I mean, there's two aspects to burning. One is, you know, we're planning on taking revenue from the game. So as I mentioned, you can the pot aspect as well as in-game purchases will take a slice of that as revenue for the company, and of that we will buy back the token and burn it at intervals. So that helps because we have a limited supply of 1 billion. The objective is to kind of make the price of it also go up over time to make it an attractive vehicle for, I hate to say investment, but that's kind of the way people are treating it, even though it's just a utility token. the other aspect of burning is also what we've recently done with the unsold tokens from ICO or the pre-sales. So, you know, we didn't sell out of our allocation that we were hoping to. You know, that was the 1.25 million very, very stretched target. We didn't get there, but that's okay. So we're now in the process of burning the tokens that we didn't sell. We're kind of strategically doing it in three tranches. The first tranche was basically just after the initial drop, and then the second tranche will be after we do the second bonus drop, because we've got bonus tokens that are vested for people who were involved in pre-sales or did referrals, or, you know, it's all these mechanisms we put in place. So everyone got the base rate on day one, so that kind of prevents initial dumping. And then there's bonus tokens that are dropped 30 days and 60 days after that event. And so that's when we'll also do the burns. And by the end, which is, I think, the 1st of January is the last drop event. By then, all the tokens will be burnt. It'll either be locked up. And so we'll have that's when the complete picture of distribution will be completely worked out, guaranteed.
Good stuff. And just on the game itself, you know, you've talked about these timeframes. So you're looking to beta in December. How's that going in terms of timeframe? And can you hit that? And then you're looking to obviously launch sometime in the new year, but, you know, how are you going with that? That's obviously the big question a lot of people are asking as well.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I view it in terms of there's a smart contracts that we're deploying to the blockchain. That's one aspect, almost independently of whatever else we're doing. And then the other is the gameplay itself. So, you know, we did a lot of the blockchain work during ICO. So even though, you know, my time was spent predominantly in sales and marketing and all those kind of things, realistically, you know, Callan was off doing the dev on the smart contract work while all this was going on. So we're in a really good position from the smart contract point of view. In fact, we've got a 2D version of the game that is awesome. In essence, feature complete from the point of view of what we were promising on day one. We've launched that on Polygon's testnet. And so there's a 2D version out there. It's not really playable in the sense that, you know, it's a dev thing where you've got an admin console and you've got to set things up in a certain way. The point is, we wanted to get that. We view that as the existential risk in terms of if we can't deliver that, we can't deliver the project. So number one is to get that part of it done. And that's exactly where, you know, Callum, you know, shined and was able to get that done. And the game dev stuff, I mean, to be fair, it's you throw this out there to a company who does 3D games and would be confident of hitting that delivery, just in terms of how simple we've tried to engineer. We're not trying to promise a AAA game in 2 months. I mean, that would be ridiculous. We're actually we're targeting it very, very simply in order to get to beta. And that's not to say dev needs to stop in beta. The whole point of beta is that's where the testing, the user testing, all of that comes into play. I mean, we've got lots of experience in user interfaces and things like that. But until you get the game out there and see how it functions and see how people utilize it, that's where that lesson's going to be learnt. So in terms of, you know, I said, you know, December is sometime in December. That gives us 31 days to play with in terms of, you know, will we hit it on the 1st of December? Unlikely. 31st of December, I'm very confident we'll have something by then. You know, mid-month, I think, would be a good target. But, you know, I think as time goes on and as we see the pace of development come through from our other developers, we've got plan Bs and Cs and Ds already in the works.
Good stuff.
We're already trying to talk to local devs. We've spoken to a company this week who can help out if need be. for them, it's just give us enough money and we will do it. We'll drop everything and just help you guys. So,
yeah.
And that's exactly what the ICO is about, right?
That's
we
it.
Can now execute on
you've
this.
Got the runway. We've got the you've got the runway.
Exactly. And because momentum is such a big issue in this space, being able to actually deliver a product, get it working, get it to market. Having said that, there is an interesting dynamic that I learned at Carbon where sometimes the hype is actually more important than the delivery, because you can hype, price goes up, then you deliver and then there's no more hype because you've just got the product. So
yeah, as long as that's balanced out and that's actually, it becomes almost level. That's good. When the hype is out and then the delivery comes and it goes like that, that's a problem. Right. But I don't think you guys would do that.
Yeah, but then also having a token use case and being able to use it in the ecosystem and have other things going on, I think that's the ability to, as you said, you know, once you're over the hype, now you're actually functioning and you're actually using it for purposes. So
that's it. Cool. I just wanted to, because you know, I'm a hosting guy by trade. You know, I've done hosting platforms before. I'm interested. How does a Web3 on-chain game look from an infrastructure point of view? You know, what are you using to actually, you know, without giving away the trade secrets, I mean, you mentioned React and Node.js, but is it hosted on AWS? How's the infrastructure there to basically bridge what is traditional Web2 to Web3?
Yeah, now, this is actually a really interesting question, because one of the things we're doing that we think is quite unique in this space is almost promising an entire box solution on Web3. An entire game that all of it's smart, everything can be run through smart contracts.
Wow.
Your traditional games aren't really like that. They're actually heavy, big servers with a small bridge into the actual blockchain.
Yeah.
And so we're actually, you know, actually able to use the scalability of the blockchain to kind of not have to worry about server side infrastructure at all on day one. Now, going forward, there are lots of good things you want to do in that kind of Web2 space. So, for example, chat, for example, you don't want that on blockchain. You want that to be private.
You don't want a transaction every chat, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, for those kind of mechanisms, especially if we want to keep it in-game and we don't want to use some other third-party API, then the easiest thing for us to do is just, okay, now that's when we actually need a Web2 server, or maybe it's a metadata store, or it's a cache, or it's an indexing part of the Web3. Those are the places where I think the Web2 traditionally works well. And in terms of the front end, I mean, you know, with Cloudflare and all the caching mechanisms out there, that's not even a problem nowadays. It's like, and so this is where I think the paradigm shift is so extraordinary is, you know, in the past, I worked on a team of front end and back end developers and then massive teams just to deliver that product. Throw away the back end now almost, and you just have your front end. So you can actually have a team of 5 to 10 people run a multi-billion-dollar company. This is actually happening in Web3 at the moment. You cannot do that in Web2.
I wonder if that had made my life easier back in the day, or maybe I just wouldn't have had a job.
Well, to be fair, I mean, Web3 is not magic, right? You know, you still need the providers. There still needs to be the ecosystem. Yeah. But it's kind of a solved problem in some ways. I mean, it doesn't solve all the problems. There are other, you know, things that, like the privacy aspect I mentioned. I mean, that's a big issue in terms of also how you design a game to run on a blockchain. So, you know, the full state of the system must be knowable by everyone at every stage. You could make an interface where you're hiding information, but to be fair, somebody will just create a bot where they're kind of surfacing that information and showing it everyone anyway. So
yeah.
You know, you have to also go into that mentality of what are things I can and can't do on blockchain, and then design everything around that as well.
Yeah, so it's not like you're developing this on a Web2, like you're not running it in a Kubernetes cluster as microservices, or, you know, I mean, that's probably where the chat function might come into play. Obviously, the modern
exactly.
platforms come into play. So that's really cool. We could geek out about that for ages. The one thing I want to finish on is we've touched on the NFT aspect of it. NFTs are obviously, this is the year of NFTs and it's gone ballistic, and yeah, don't get me started on the 8-bit characters. And my belief is that what NFTs have done this year for blockchain isn't healthy. But I do believe that the underlying technology is going to come through into a specific use case. I've talked about this in chat. I've got a particular example, a company called Bacon Coin, which effectively are leveraging DeFi for self-funded mortgages in the US housing market. Right. So people are putting they've got a DeFi pool, they're putting it in there, there's some sort of liquidity they're providing. And then basically out of that liquidity, that company is then offering loans to people that want to buy houses. Now, the contracts of those loans, they're in NFTs. So there's two components. There's the housing component and there's loan component. They're both individual NFTs and all the details locked in that NFT. And you can go there and you can actually go to the site and view the NFT of the housing contract that you are providing liquidity to. That's the future here of what an NFT is, right? In a broad sense, right? But what you want to do with NFTs is also the future is actually make them valuable within a game. And like we talked about, the kids throwing money away for nothing, now they're going to have something tangible. So just maybe finish off on your thoughts around how you're going to leverage NFTs in the game.
Yes, I mean, this is actually one of the things that we're investigating. It's always the topic every person on our team's got. Everyone's got their laundry list of cool NFT ideas. Next week we've actually got a roundtable forum where we're all going to get together. I've also got someone else in Perth who's in this kind of sphere. I've also invited him to kind of contribute because he's going to bring a lot to the table. But my big concern actually is around the legalities of a lot of these things. So, you know, I've lined up a chat with a lawyer tomorrow to basically talk about, you know, what can and we can't do as a company who wants to operate in the legitimate space. How many of these offerings now get into, exactly as you're talking about, those are securities, right? So now, you know, what's the legalities of this? I don't know what the answer to that is. So, you know, we've got many great ideas. Let's take some of it to a lawyer, get that kind of architecture of what is permissible and what's not permissible. And then from there, we can kind of structure the future of how we're actually going to do it for real. Because I don't want to promise and say, because we got all these great ideas, I don't want to promise to say tanks are going to be doing this and this and this. And then it's like, no, we can't do it because of legal reasons. So, yeah, I think we definitely want a lot of the notion of self-ownership. We've got notions of experimentation that we're focusing on a lot as well. So, you know, a lot of, let's try this idea out. Let's try that idea out. Let's try this idea out. And so that's also going to form part of what we're doing is we're evolving this ecosystem. We're not just, we present a very basic game, but we're using that as a launch pad for experimentation in the future. So there may be no use case for an NFT, which has some properties such as, extra range when you start the game. But then in the future, we can have these kind of richer game modes where now NFTs.
I was going to say, it opens up more game modes or different types of games, right? So you go, here's the NFT powered game where you can use your NFT for power and actually have some sort of all in brawl, like, what do they call it? The battle royals or whatever it is, so you could, that's what all the kids love these days. That's awesome. So the actual NFT component is there, but you don't want to oversell it just yet. And the fact that you've got lawyers, legal advice involved, to me, just shows that this project is even more legit than 99% of them out there. And it's going to be a great success. And just to round off, now that we've talked about the NFTs, just round out with, what do you want to talk about Tanks and the vision moving forward?
Yeah, so we actually have a big vision for Tanks for playing moving forward. We want the game to be a platform that gets the next generation to get the next cohort of people who are on the sidelines wanting to get into crypto. We want to get them into crypto. And we think that this game is one of the mechanisms to do it by being easy to play and good game that excites people, plus a technology stack that we're able to get people into crypto without having to worry about MetaMask and all this craziness that we kind of take for granted.
Yeah.
But that's not a great usability angle. So we want to solve these problems, get people into crypto, and then they're one hop, step, and a jump on away from the crazy coins and the DeFi space and all the things that we kind of take for granted. So,
and like I said before, we talked about this earlier, but this is actually my son's $10. And he's 12 years old, so obviously he can't invest properly, right? So, but he loves games, that's for sure. And we were talking about your kids and my kids, and they're the generation is going to grow up with this space booming and just normal for them, right? So I said to him, look, give me this $10 and you want to invest it in this thing called Tanks for playing. And he's like, what's that? And I showed him the video and he got excited with the gameplay. He loved the concept art, whatever it was. That's the future. And I think that's what you're going to draw in. So you're right. The vision is spot on. I'm really looking forward to, you know, carrying on with the journey. I'm looking forward to the game coming out in beta, actually what happens next year. I love the fact, again, that it's local. Everyone should get behind it if they're listening in Australia, but also internationally when people listen to this. Understand that this is serious. This is a real project with what I think is a great idea. And I think a lot of people that just even peel the onion back one layer, they realize this and they want to be involved. So I just think it's an amazing success story already and can't wait to see where you guys go. All right, so let's wrap up the show just to finish off. And once again, if you like great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, please subscribe to the podcast or contact myself. You can find me at Anthony Spiteri or at GTWGT Podcast or on our YouTube and Anchor channels. So once again, thanks to Tanks for playing. Tanks for Tanks. I was waiting to say that all episode. I'm so sorry, but it's so easy to say. Aaron, thanks for being on. It's been a great episode. I've really enjoyed it. We covered so much areas, different areas of technology, blockchain. Good luck with what's coming. Thanks for being on. Great things with great tech.
Thanks, guys. It's been great. Thanks.
No worries.